Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. Tim was talking. We got Brooke here. We got Purnell here. We got Chris here. And Aki's here. How's everyone doing?
Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm cold.
Freezing.
Pretty good.
Yeah. We are discussing varying temperatures before the show.
I didn't realize how good I was doing until I heard how y'all were doing temperature-wise. Now I'm feeling pretty thankful.
There should be note to you, you're likely to always be doing better than the regions we're all from.
Yeah.
Just say it. Just Brooke's say like, it.
My life's on track.
Finally.
Oh, so it's been a while since we've had everyone in the party cast here, plus Aki.
I know.
It is. I haven't heard Brooke's voice in like 2 months.
I know.
I've talked to Brooke, but not, Brooke, like, I know, not like this.
Isn't there something you wanted to tell Tim last week?
Oh, Tim, they're not calling me Brooke anymore. We're just calling me Elden Lord because you weren't here.
I mean, I was Elden Lord first, and I've been Elden Lord multiple times over, so I
Elden Lord
don't appreciate you attempting to usurp my Elden throne.
Doesn't that just kind of cheapen the whole Elden Lord thing if you've been multiple times Elden Lord? It's like, passing.
Hey, you know what? You can be a multiple-time world champion. It just keeps sounding better and better. 16-time Elden Lord. Come on.
Wait, 16 times? Seriously?
No. Just three. Oh, no, 16 is... Yeah,
whoa,
that's,
three. Yeah.
That's does John Cena, Ric Flair's.
Joe knows what I'm referencing.
One does it done. Still do the thing where when and you beat Charlotte the game soon. And come back, the game is harder than the previous run?
Yeah. Yeah, I played it three times with my first character to get all the achievements. And then I started a second character and started playing Rogue Legacy 2 somewhere after I beat the Academy of Rhea Lucaria.
Meanwhile, I'm still in the Magic Castle area for the first time because, god damn, everything's awful. But I do want to do it. One day. One day it's going to happen, guys. I will finish it.
I'm still waiting until the end of this week to pick up my Elden Ring on PS5 so that I can start playing that in earnest. Catherine has discovered Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, and now she's playing that like all the time.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good game, actually, that I've wanted to get. Like, it's, you might be like, how do you know it's a good game if you personally don't own it, Purnell? Well, because it's built off of the Sheeran the Engine, the Sheeran the Adventure one.
Sheeran the Wanderer, yeah.
And I love Sheeran the Wanderer, so.
That, everybody has played, like, because that company has developed so many games with different licenses, like, everybody's played a Mystery Dungeon, because, like, it's Pokemon, it's, you know, Dragon Quest.
Etrian Odyssey of all things.
Etrian Odyssey and Sheeran the Wanderer. That's, like, their original OC, Do Not Steal. And, it's a great style of gameplay. My actual favorite one was the Izuna Legend of the Unemployed Ninja.
Oh, I remember you were a huge fan of that, and I was always sad that I had the second one, but never was able to get the first one.
I lucked out and got the second one before DS pricing went to hell. So I got like the last non-$1,000 copy or whatever it is.
Jeez.
Yeah, I came with it. Also, maybe we can both mess around with Elden Ring again because I do. Yeah. I don't think it's not going to make my four in February because I have all of 2 hours to decide on what they're going to be. I'm working on it.
I'll need to join whatever secret discussion group is going on with this podcast so that I can ask for the tips and stuff. I'm pretty sure, though, the secret group is just openly a discussion on Twitter.
I mean, the trick is just to not die, unfortunately. That's the game. Don't
easy.
Die. It's a gamble, but you got what it takes, sir.
I can never get over Purnell calling it 4 in February when it's 4 February. You got to get the F's there.
They both work, just one lacks alliteration, but, you know...
Mine is different. Yours is fifth.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yours is alliteration. Mine is just different.
What is it again? Trying to beat four games in a month?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick four games that have been on your backlog and beat them in February.
Ooh. Though in my personal defense, I kind of abandoned the have to beat them mantra ages ago for a number of reasons, but I try to. But if I can at least put some solid time into four games, that's enough for me.
I was going to say, maybe I should pick four games.
Play them until you're done with them.
Yeah.
Literally that, exactly. Yeah. Like, just play until you're done.
You don't choose them ahead of time?
No, I do.
No, usually people do. They set goals. And
You choose them ahead of time, but you're not like people. I've had people who didn't want to do it because like, well, there's no way I'm going to beat four games in a month. I'm like, no shit, most of us won't. The point is just to play them, and if you can beat them, that's great. If you feel you're tired of them, that's great too.
Yeah.
But your goals are just experience four games that you just kind of let languish on your shelf or on your hard drive, either way.
Put forth an effort. Give it an honest go.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you don't like it, you don't like it. Don't force yourself to play something you don't like just because you said you were going to beat it in February.
Oh, please. Exactly. I'm a streamer. I do that all the time.
Like, I'm booting up...
I do not. I am a father. I do not.
Yeah. I ain't got time for that shit.
I know two games that came down the pike because it was mentioned on Rhythm and Pixels, and some people want to play it with me as well as Hollow Knight because I never sat down to that. Oh,
wonderful game.
So I started Hollow Knight. A friend finally convinced me to put some emulators on my Steam Deck, so I am going to probably finally sit down and play through the Goonies 2 again Nintendo, because I used to love that game. And then the other two are kind of a mystery. I'm sure what the hell they would be yet.
Well, yeah. I definitely, looking at my top 10 on Switch, I need to finish Dragon Quest XI, because it's the only game that is in my top 10 on Switch that I have yet to beat. It's in my top 10 most played.
That game is long as shit, though. I need to get back to that myself.
Yeah,
like,
but
you
I'm
might
like,
need
I'm
to put that for next February.
I got to the second ending in that game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what makes me mad. The most angry about not playing through it is the fact that I had more than a few people, without spoiling, because I don't even know what it is, but they were like, this game flips the trope on its head, and then you still have to keep going. And I'm like, really? Like, for a Dragon Quest game,
they've been doing that for a while. 55 really? Hours is how much I played of it so far.
Jeez. Give me an example of one that did that before that I may be forgetting.
Well, I don't know the specific spoiler that you're talking about, but like...
Well, Dragon Quest VIII, that one had more after, like, you'd get the first credits and then there was more to discover.
Yeah, 7 also, 7 was really, 7 really, really twisted it.
Yeah, they did do that with the, like, the DS re-releases. I didn't play through 4 and 5 in their original forms. But
now, keep in mind, I'm not saying, like, you know, there's a whole second quest, that sort of thing. So I do get how there's a post-game or, like, a second ending, like the Dragon Kingdom in 8. I mean, like, they were saying from a narrative perspective, it does something where you go, that did not see that coming at all.
Yes.
Like, it made the person that I knew play go, this is amazing to me. And I've been playing Dragon Quest games my whole life. And that made me, and he's a big fan, so I'm like, holy shit, I need to get to that point. And then, you know, like,
well, you know, as someone who did that, well, just tape your expectations. Maybe it won't be as exciting as they might have, some people might make it out to be.
Not as mind blowing, more like, wow, that's cool.
Mind
massaging.
Yeah, no, it was cool, but Dragon Quest XI didn't knock my socks off like some other Dragon Quests have. But it's still good. I still love it because it's Dragon Quest.
Yeah. They're all good.
Yeah.
I too like the Dragon's Quest on occasion.
Oh, so I do have a story of playing video games from this week that I thought I would relate to y'all.
Does it involve Good Pastor?
No, I wish it did.
Maybe you must not say the name on the show, Purnell.
No. It's about a good pastor, you know, at the Church of Gamer Christ. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
really,
backlog
really,
Saints.
Really good cover. Totally covered that one.
Anyways. I don't care at this point. But anyways, I mean, you know, I'm sure Joe does. Over the weekend, I went to a small mini micro convention in Texas. And the one thing I ended up picking up, I actually was not expecting to find it, but it was so reasonably priced for what it was. A nigh brand new copy of The Adventure of Link, Zelda 2.
Oh,
and
cool.
Like complete in box. It had, you know, the box really nice shape. It's in a, you know, it was in a plastic thing too, so It was like protected. And the, you know, it had the instruction book, didn't have a single wrinkle on it. It had the poster, which I probably am the first one to have unfolded. The Now You're Playing With Power poster that shows all the upcoming games, like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and whatnot. And also had the Nintendo Power subscription card, which is great. I haven't filled it in yet. but the game itself... The game itself was, it's the gold cartridge, and it is so like nice and brand new and shiny looking that we literally, I was like, I'm going to open this up just to see if this is fake. And it was real. So, you know, anyway, I get it home.
Did they let you just open it there to verify it?
Well, it was already open. It wasn't like a sealed game. It
no,
was
like open the box, cartridge.
But... Yeah. They do that now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, fakes are so rampant now that like a lot of people go to these conventions with the little hex screwdriver. Anyways, yeah, and it was at the person selling its insistence. They were like, oh, we got the thing here if you want to open and check it. And I was like, at first I was like, but then like a friend of mine was like, actually this Nintendo logo looks a little like whatever. And I was like, I don't see what you're seeing, but okay, I'll do it. And so I did it. And yeah, it's an authentic board. It's just the Nintendo logo sometimes looks a little blurry on these games, even though everything else looks good. It's because of this shadow effect that they put on it, and with certain colors, it doesn't blend quite right. Anyway, I get the cart home and start, and I turn it on, and it has one save data on it. Mark is the name of the player.
Son of a bitch.
Mark was at level one on everything, had zero continues on file, and had done nothing. Mark turned on the game, turned it back off, and then like put it back in the box, and then the next person to own it is me.
Yeah, like, this game sucks. Done.
I know. Side scroller. And I mean, you know, there's nothing to say that somebody who, you know, owned this game at some point didn't eliminate the other save datas, but I mean, because the cart looks so brand new, like it was just so like pristine, I was like, that's the story I'm going with, is that Mark is the previous owner, and he just turned it on, turned it off, and left it in a box for 30 years.
So Mark gave up. He just gave up.
So on my stream, I decided, you know what? We're going to vindicate Mark. I'm going to play his save data and beat the game. And so, just yesterday on stream, I turned it on and played through Mark's data and actually beat the game in 3 hours and 24 minutes.
Nice.
From level one to the end of the game.
Were you playing from memory?
Where does that put you on the speedrun list?
No, nowhere. Nowhere on the speedrun list.
The bottom.
The speedrun for it's less than an hour at the at the 100% category, which is how I played it. Yeah, wow. I played it from... I did it from memory. Yeah.
There has to be glitches. There's no goddamn way.
If it's 100% no glitches, then yeah, I think it's about an hour.
That has to be glitches.
No.
I don't think so.
Beat the whole game in an hour with everything. It takes that long just to walk the damn map in some respects. If you have to go through the caves and stuff.
I'm going to have to look through the episode to verify like what's the 100% record. It might be more than an hour, but it's certainly not 3.5 hours. Cause I got three game overs and, I didn't get lost, but I did get all the way to the end of a dungeon, and I was about to like level up, and you know that resets it to a convenient point if you do get a game over. And then I just happened to get murdered by the boss because it was the random boss. And
it's
then
like the record is 113.46.
There you go.
That and how
100% all keys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even do all keys. I get the infinite key before the second to last dungeon. So,
oh, yeah, wait. No. 100%, just 100%, not the all keys. 100%, no major glitches, is 1 hour and a minute.
Okay.
How the fuck?
Why don't you watch it and find out, Purnell?
I might have to, but I expect to see cheesing occur. There's no way around it.
Background.
Define cheesing.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it in a slight as in, like, this not right or anything, but I mean, like, the idea, the equivalent of like someone ducking in the marble zone in Sonic and just like blitzing to the end of the stage because they...
Well, no, that's a glitch.
In the game.
Yeah, that's considered a glitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like maybe the wrong term, but I'm referring to like glitches.
Well, up in A is its own category, I guess.
Well, I have conveniently copied and pasted it into the Discord so you can watch it and educate yourself, Pernell, and we'll discuss it next week.
Intriguing. On the next episode, Pernell lowers the difference between glitching and cheesing.
I'm watching it right now.
One involves a camera.
Anyway, yeah, so that's what I did.
Brooke, what have you been up to?
She's also speedrunning Zelda.
Jesus.
I'm actually doing really good. No, Chris brought actual material. I don't have anything. I don't know. I'm trying to name my rabbit. That's about all I got going on. It's paralyzing.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like Mark.
Do we have some top choices for rabbit name?
I kind of want to like pretend he's a dog as a bit. So I kind of want to name him like Fido or Lucky or something. Carrie's not picking up on it. Then my friend wanted to name him. I thought Jack could be a cute name. And my friend thought he kind of has like a black mark over one of his eyes and almost looks like an eye patch. So she was like, oh, you could name him Calico Jack. Which was a real pirate's name. It's an actual, like, dreaded pirate. And I was like, whoa, no way. I got to look this up. And I Google him. And it turns out that was one of the names that was that they used for the real pirate, Jack Rackham, whom I'm familiar with. Going to bring us back to video games here seamlessly. I'm familiar with Jack Rackham from Sid Meier's Pirates, one of my all-time favorite games. I don't know if y'all played that.
Sounds like you should name your rabbit Sid Meier.
Yo, not Sid. Anymore, because now I learned that Sid Meier could have named a pirate Calico Jack in his game, and he decided to go with Jack Rackham. Like, that name's got a great ring to it, but I don't forgive. Calico Jack is just too cool. So now I'm thinking of that.
Calico
because,
Jack.
Yeah, that's all I have going on, you guys. That's literally it.
Hey, rabbits are precious. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I'm excited. I'm sitting next to 10 pounds of hay. I'm so ready for this rabbit show. Like, I have a rabbit castle made out of, like, cardboard, and I think everybody's tired of seeing the rabbit bed and all its accessories, so...
Probably I'm not.
Oh, my God. You're about to get some DMs.
You should post, all that stuff in the Cats and Cute Shit Discord channel.
Ooh, I will. I actually forgot
that. Oh, that is
that.
There, yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So anyway, so should we get to reviews? Or Aki, anything going on in your world this week?
Aki's home.
I just can't. Yeah, I'm home and my furnace isn't working right. So I had it set to 60 degrees this entire day. When know what the highest it got in my house was? 51.
4.
51 is pretty cold.
Yeah, I was not particularly thrilled. And then I turned it off because there's no point in having it on. It is broken. It's not working. Mm. Like half the time when it turns on, no heat comes out. So it's not doing me any good. So I'm just trying not to open the doors at all to try and keep as much of the hot air in and stave off the below freezing temperatures it is outside right now.
Like, is there anyone you can call and tell them, hey, my heater's broken?
No, this is a really, really old furnace.
Yeah, she's telling us.
And and some of the issues with it are things that are just, you need a whole brand new, like, chunk of it, and they don't sell the parts to this anymore, and haven't for a number of years, we'll say.
My friend had a furnace like that.
Yeah, like, people still have these, and they're taken out of homes.
Mm-hmm.
But the parts aren't sold for it anymore. And originally there was supposed to be someone who was going to replace this part from one of them that they took out on the regular. And then that person, you know, flaked on me and hasn't returned any calls or anything. And I've been trying to get a hold of, I tried to get a hold of him at the beginning of winter this year and nothing. So no, I'm just going to have to spend like, 2,000-4,000 whatever the hell of furnace costs and get a new one. But that ain't gonna happen anytime soon because that's a lot of goddamn money.
Money.
So other than that, I've just been playing review games because I have no life.
That's a lot of goddamn money.
Yes, it is. And the best part is, not only does the furnace need replacing, but if a problem ever comes up with my air conditioner, I have to replace it. Because they won't service mine anymore. Mine uses some chemical in it that just recently, like within the past couple of years, they created a new one, said, okay, you're not allowed to service this old one because it's worse for the environment. So
chemical X.
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly the chemical was, but so they won't service mine if there's ever a problem, even if it's not related to whatever coolant is used. Oof. I have to buy a brand new one. So I'm hoping that never happens. So it's great. I hate my house sometimes. But it's better than an HOA, so whatever.
Yeah.
So that's just it. That's all that's going on
at
my
the
life.
End was
no, we brought things down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you never ask me questions, because it's always either nothing's happening or things suck.
Well, I mean, did any good food lately, or did you see a cool movie or show?
You know, it was awesome lately. Rumble.
No. See, Aki needs a positive. There's got to be something.
Okay. Here's a positive. I spent way too much on Gundam, so I have a lot of models. Yeah, I have 16 models that are ready for shipping to come here anytime I want to have them shipped. Which would mean 22 Gundam models in total that I need to build. It only cost me a small fortune, but...
So they only ship them when you're ready to build them?
The place that I order from allows you to hold on to them up to 3 months from when they come in. That way, because they have a flat shipping, so no matter how many Gundams I put in, it still costs the same amount shipping. I have a tendency just to wait until about the whole 3 months is up and then just have everything shipped all at once, because I'm like that.
As someone who works for a shipping software company, I actually understand exactly what you mean, but it's too boring to talk about on air.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they'd hold it longer, but I understand.
Yeah.
So, reviews?
There you go. Yes, yeah. Please take
video games.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Raiden 4 Cross Mikado Remix, developed by Moss, published by NIS America, released January 31st on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. A blast from the past soars into current day. Raiden 4 Mikado Remix stays true to the arcade origins while launching the franchise into the present. Tim, what makes this launched into the present?
That it's on PS5, really.
Fair.
Because, you know, it's... Come on, drink some water, Joe. I can hear your throat going.
It's just...
I'm fine. You sound like Excalibur after you did the run for Rampage and Dynamite. Come on. So it's Raiden 4. Raiden 4 Cross Mikado. Raiden 4, which is an old ass game in its own right. I don't know, old ass.
I bought it for 360 back in.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that is old ass at this point.
Yeah. 2009, sadly. I think, is when I bought it.
There's Raiden 5 now. And even this version of the game has been out for a couple years on other platforms. So
I reviewed it on Switch last year.
Yeah. Now it's on PS5, and as far as I can tell, it's the same version that was released on Switch and has been out on Steam for some time now. And that you have Raiden 4. This is kind of like the ultimate version of this game. In fairness, not to downplay the fact that this is a game that's been out for a while, but yeah, you have this version of the game that has three different versions of Raiden 4 on it, actually. It has, like, the classic arcade mode, it has what is ostensibly the 360 version, it has this other remixed mode that's kind of like the 360 version, at least in terms of the fact that it has all the stages and a different scoring system. This is a top-down shoot-em-up. The lineage of the series goes back a long, long time. To the earlier arcade days. I don't remember when the first Raiden came out. Probably late 80s, early 90s, something like that. I don't
know. Chris, you're the shmup historian.
1990, yeah, right on the dot.
Right on. Yeah, I was gonna say it's very close to 1990, but
you caught me.
Yeah. You caught me not knowing the exact date.
Busted.
Damn.
So Yeah, it is a game, and especially in this incarnation, that is focused on you getting the highest score possible. It is about chasing the score. It's not just about getting from one end to the other. And getting that high ass score can take different forms depending on which mode you're playing in. You get more score in some modes by moving your jet right up in front of the enemies, like at the top of the screen, and putting yourself in harm's way. You rack up score in the appropriately named overkill mode by overkilling larger enemies to like make them spit more points out rather than focusing on other things. But you know, you have a variety there of ways to, you know, play the game, rack up different scores, and try to compete against other nut jobs who love playing these games. Also special for this version is the soundtrack. That's the Cross Mikado thing, in that they got some specific composers, artists, seems more appropriate for this, to lay in some tracks for this game. But you can switch back and forth between the original soundtrack and like the Mikado special soundtrack. It's got a few different difficulties. There's one that's like, if you haven't played Raiden before, you start with this one. You start with this easy one right here. Don't you go touching other modes. And then there's one. Don't touch it. And then there's one that's like, if you played Raiden before, you come over here. You come over here. It's
safe. Come on over.
This is the one for you. It's safe. Come to this one. But if you're, you know, you could, if you're new here, you could play five stages, have fun, and do that. And also, like, there's a mode where you can just turn off all the enemies shooting at you, so you can just kind of like practice learning the layouts of the stages and such. So that's cool. I mean, as about a complete a package for Raiden 4 as you can ask for 4. And now it lives on a PlayStation 5, even though it's been out and had a very rigorous embargo. We could not talk about this game that's been out and other things. It's like, okay, dude, hey, whatever.
I don't question embargoes. They tell us what to do. I don't
question. You listen. Yep. No, I'll question it now after the embargo, but that's the only question. They don't have to answer. It's rhetorical.
And it's not just on PS5. It's also on PS4, Xbox One, Series X and S.
Okay. All that stuff. It's coming to all the good consoles. And still it remains on the Switch.
Now it's been delisted from the Switch. Fuck those guys.
Oh no.
Yeah, they removed it from the, they had to move it from the Switch over to the other. They only had one digital copy. They had one digital copy to move around and that's it.
Just like one Atari cartridge they blow on it and pass it over to the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's $40. What are your thoughts?
So my thought is, I mean, it's certainly worth purchasing for the shoot 'em up fanatic. It is worth noting. This just coincidentally popped up in, or I saw it on Twitter, cheap ass Twitter, tweeted it that, you know, the game is on sale for $26.99 on Steam right now. If you have Steam and a computer that can run it, if you want to play it on there, and it's only $30 normally. So, you know, not on Steam, but you know, if you want to get a physical version, of course.
I believe if the you are launch version of the physical edition also comes with a digital download of the soundtrack, and mm-hmm. then the NIST store had an even fancier special delicious
special delicious
special delicious
that came with a physical soundtrack. So
yeah,
that's if you were cool. able to That'd score one of those, time, GG.
Yeah, that definitely for shoot 'em up score chasing fiends, though, not for like your average bear, perhaps.
Cool. All right, next up, Wonder Boy Anniversary Collection, developed by Blissbrain, published by Blissbrain and Innin Games, released January 26th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $49.99. One Sega icon, 6 perfect games, 21 different versions.
Perfect?
Perfect games across 21 different versions. There's never been a Wonder Boy collection quite like this. Chris, what's going on in Wonder Boy Anniversary Collection?
Well, actually, it's kind of the point is that there has been a collection somewhat like this, because Innin, is that how you say it?
I have no clue.
I don't know. Those boys. Those boys. They came out with the Wonder Boy collection prior to this, which was something I reviewed some time ago. The Wonder Boy series is very, very confusing, and you bet I'm going to try and explain it a little bit There's not much else. There's not much else to talk about besides what I already covered.
Keep it under 25 minutes.
Yeah. But it's important to note that the Wonder Boy collection the original release came with four games. It was Wonder Boy in Monster Land, Monster World 3.
This is where it gets real confusing.
Yeah,
and then Monster World 4. So that's four games, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, essentially. And it just comes with the one version. Your Wonder Boy is just the Sega Mark I arcade release. The Wonder Boy in Monster Land is also the System 2 world release. Monster World 3 is the Sega Genesis release, and Monster World 4 is a translated version of the never-before-released Monster World 4 on also the Sega Mega Drive /Genesis. Okay, so this version, the anniversary version, they were like, hey, did we not include the version of each of these games that you wanted? Plus, you're kind of maybe wondering what happened to Wonder Boy 3, Monster Lair, and Monster World 2, which is not Wonder Boy and Monster Land. Well, here you go. Here's all of them. And plus, here's every version of them that we could find. This includes... I'm just going to take it game by game very quickly. Wonder Boy comes with six different versions of Wonder Boy. Now, if you are living in America, you don't know Wonder Boy that well. Actually, yes, you do. It's Adventure Island. they just took the character Tom Tom, the Wonder Boy in question, apparently, and replaced him with a dopey guy called Master Higgins, who is based on a Japanese, like, score chaser speedrunner named Master Takahashi. And that's its whole other story. So Wonder Boy is Adventure Island with the original character intact. So you do get the System 1 release here. You also get the different kind of 8-bit Sega console ports, including the SG-1000 port, which is just going to look like fancy Atari, essentially. It's like pre-NES, like 8-bit, but like kind of like right after Atari, so it like barely has anything in it. It's quite amazing. I recommend playing it. It has the Sega Mark III version, which is basically the Master System version. They're just right there. It's funny because when you're looking at the screenshot preview before you select one, the Sega Mark III version just adds Super to Wonder Boy, and then the Master System takes it away. And then you get the Game Gear Japanese version, which is, of course, the Game Gear version. And then you get the world version of it, which was inexplicably titled Revenge of Drancon. And we don't know who Drancon is. We don't care. It's just two Game Gear versions. One's in English. One is not. So that's six different versions of Wonder Boy. They're all great. I like the Master System version and the Mark I version, of course, because it's the arcade version, and you can rich kid strat your way through it, which is very nice. Okay, so here's where it gets confusing, is after the first game. So it branched off, essentially, into a sequel that kind of started the adventure RPG aspect of Wonder Boy. So it's Wonder Boy in Monster Land. Now this, again, on the original collection, they had the, I believe it was the System 2 world version, which is an arcade game that is pretty good. But this game also came out on Master System. So what we get in this collection is four versions. We get the System 2 Japanese version, Sega Mark III, Master System, and System 2 world version. So for us English speakers, that means we get to play the arcade version or the Master System version. The other two are identical. They're just in Japanese. So it's a really good... I'll talk about the actual games in a bit. I'm just talking about the versions right now. Then they came out with Wonder Boy 3 Monster Lair. Now here's, again, where it gets confusing. This is Wonder Boy 3, which came out on the TurboGrafx System 16 and the Genesis. This is the game that, this is a whole different kind of thing. It's a auto runner that, also turns into a shmup, and it just stars this knight with green hair, and it's the Wonder Boy, I guess. And you go through and fight bosses, and like you go through these auto-scrolling levels. This game is not in the other collection at all. And then, yes, and now here's where it gets even more confusing. So we have Wonder Boy, Wonder Boy in Monster Land, Wonder Boy 3, Monster Lair. Then the fourth game is called Monster World 2. Where was Monster World 1? Doesn't exist. This is kind of a sequel to Wonder Boy in Monster Land. It takes that platforming action RPG-ness that Wonder Boy in Monster Land had and adds... Yeah, and it adds a kind of different plot to it. Here's what's even more confusing, is that in most areas, this game is called Wonder Boy 3, but there's already a Wonder Boy 3 Monster Lair. See where this is confusing? This is a second Wonder Boy 3 that is a completely different game, depending on where you're from. I hear gurgling.
My brain is just, like, falling apart right now.
I believe I'm having a stroke.
So this game came out on the Master System and Game Gear in Japan and in the U.S., or the world, rather. So there's four different versions of this game, too. It's the Mark III Master System and both Game Gear versions. This is the game that we know that got re-released on the Switch independently as Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap. So that's what this is kind of known as, is Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap. Very, very good game, and I'm very glad that it's on this system now. But this is a game that has been released on the Switch by itself with the reskin by Nicholas, I believe, was the publisher. Excellent, excellent reskin. Okay, so that's the fourth game, Monster World 2, a.k.a. Wonder Boy 3 Dragon's Lair. Dragon's Trap, sorry. Then we have Wonder Boy in Monster World, which is actually Monster World 3. This came out on the Genesis as Wonder Boy in Monster World. It also, again, it's considered Wonder Boy 5 Monster World 3 in Japan. This is the game that originally came out in the U.S. is on the Sega Genesis. It's kind of the debut in that sense for most people with this series. It, again, follows the adventure platformer thing, but it's, you know, it's a new game. It actually, though, borrows a lot of elements from Wonder Boy and Monster Land, so it's kind of like, it's like the Super Mario World to its Super Mario Brothers, you know? Just same thing, but more advanced. And then, they came out with Monster World 4, which, of course, is the Japan-only game starring the girl, Aisha, and it did not come out in the U.S. until, you know, depending on whether you're into emulation or not. It was fan translated in 2002, but like the official.
Let's not even get into the fan stuff. Yeah, oh my exactly. God, that's a whole different branch.
So,
forest.
Exactly, yeah. So, but this is the final game, and it was released in Japan only initially, but in the modern era, this is actually the third re-release of this game. So it's present now. Like, we definitely have access to this.
Okay, I have a question.
Oh, please,
just no one?
Well, no, because most of this is just gibberish to me, and I've given up. What does this game play like? Because I've already forgotten what genre of game this is already.
Glad you asked.
That's the fun part.
Jesus Christ. In a general way, so we've got two, like, we basically got four games here that play very similarly, right? And it's basically action platforming with Metroidvania elements. However, in like the first one, Wonder Boy in Monster Land, it's things like you can like buy items and gain gold and like, you know, get all this stuff. But once you leave an area, you can't go back to it. So it's kind of like Kid Icarus in that way. It's like if you miss buying like a shield at a shop, then you got to like find a shield shop in a later level and buy the shield at that point, you know, if you didn't collect enough money. It's like, so it's kind of a mix of arcade action and the other. In Wonder Boy 3 Monster Lair, in Monster World 2, which is like basically the sequel to that fourth game overall, that's where you start off as a knight. And you get to play, like, through the early game as, like, a high-powered, like, will-never-die invincible guy. And then you defeat a dragon, and you get turned into a dragon. And now you have to traverse the world, unlocking all these different non-human forms, and then exploring different levels and to try and eventually turn yourself back into a human. It's actually really, really cool. And that's, like... Huh?
That's my favorite one of the bunch by far.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good. And it's basically a Metroidvania because each new monster gives you new abilities, which unlocks new areas for you in a in an overarching world that you know, becomes more accessible as you gain more powers. Very good game. Monster World 3, kind of similar. It's you're going through levels and such, and it's you know, like I said, it's a little bit more linear like Wonder Boy in Monster Land, but it's still running around, hitting things with your sword, gaining powers and power-ups, and you know, getting through levels, collecting stuff. Monster World 4 is a little bit more open, too, as you're playing with Aisha. It's kind of, it's more about the, like, the big dungeon levels, you know, in it, is in such. But, yeah, it's, this one's a lot more, like, kind of character-driven. There's more dialogue, you get to meet more people, you know. Like, for instance, Monster World 2, aka Wonder Boy Dragon's Trap. You know, you talk to like shop owners and stuff, and like inexplicably, you go to church to save your game with a sidekick with a crystal ball, which is kind of weird. But my favorite part of it is the pigs that run the literally pigs, like humanoid pigs that run the stores, and they have a little sign in the background that says "Shopping, please." And I like that they retain that for the reskin of the game. But anyway, the outliers on this one is the original Wonder Boy, which again is just, it's just running from left to right and dodging things, and it's impossibly difficult if you're just trying to go, you know, unless you're using the rewind features and such, which we'll just now get to. And then of course, like I said, Wonder Boy 3 Monster Lair is a auto runner where you get to shoot with your sword essentially and do some platforming, but the screen is perpetually moving to the right, and then it turns into a shmup every now and then, and you have to do like these big boss fights too. So lots of different gameplays there. So the added features in here, as opposed to the other one, is that this one comes with a gallery. And like I said, in each game, you also get different options. Each one comes with a rewind feature and a fast forward feature, which is interesting. It comes with save states with plenty of save slots for you, so these difficult games can become much easier for newbies. They also come with a screen by screen map of the entire game, each one. So if you want to look at what a level looks like before playing through it, you can totally do that. Nice. That's pretty cool. Some of them come with additional options, difficulty toggles, controller like enhancements that can be optionally turned on or off, just depending on the game and like, you know, how helpful that is. Weirdly, the enhanced controls are turned on by default, so I actually went back and turned them all off because I'm like, no, I want to play this game the way I used to play it. The gallery is interesting because each game has its own gallery, so you know, choose the gallery and then the game and then the overall collection for additional stuff. Here's where the first of a couple of little complaints come up. If you go to the gallery and then you choose Wonder Boy Collection and then you choose soundtrack, and you're like, okay, so this is going to be the soundtrack. I get to listen to the soundtrack now. It's not. It's just a bunch of other pictures of the game. There's no soundtrack. They didn't include it. So it has a part that says soundtrack that just gives you like six pictures.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird. The only other thing is that there's a couple of typos, like the word Everil instead of several in the description for Wonder Boy, like, you know, different little things like that. I think that maybe they meant to have the soundtrack in there, but they, I don't know, maybe they assigned it wrong, or maybe it's, I don't know if it's unlockable. They certainly don't tell you, and for a game that includes, like, for instance, every US and Japanese manual scanned in for each game where applicable, and arcade flyers and stuff like that, you'd think this wouldn't be something that would be overlooked, or at least they'd let you know where it is. But yeah, I don't know what happened to the soundtrack, guys. What happened?
I don't know. We'll find out in the future. Yeah. Hopefully they'll address it. But as it stands, the game's $50. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, if you're a Wonder Boy fan, obviously this is like the last thing you need, like, and in a good way. I mean, this is like the final thing that you need, besides maybe the reskin of Dragon's Trap and the Wonder Boy. What's that one that came out, the like Switch specific one, or like the modern? Anyway, that one.
You would know.
I would know. I own it. I have it physically. I just don't remember the title because I've just read too many titles. No, this is the ultimate collection for this stuff. I mean, I can't personally think of one thing that's missing.
The PhD you need in order to understand any of the shit that you've been talking about. I think that's what's been missing, because I still have no idea what you're talking about.
Please, Dr. Wonderboy is my father. I'm simply Wonderboy. The other, yeah, like I said, it really gives you, like, the ability to, like, kind of choose.
That's how long it took me to unmute to laugh my ass off at that, dude. That was hilarious. Sorry to interrupt you, but very important to me that you know that.
Thank you. But yeah, like I said, it's all here. Like I said, the Wonder Boy collection was pretty good, but like I said, just having one version of each game and, you know, maybe it not being the version that people know because, you know, all the Master System stuff was excluded, for instance. You know, I was like, yeah, I really want to check out the anniversary version because that looked like it was going to be bigger and better. Emulation's perfect. You get great options. I mean, there's nothing to complain about in this apart from that the soundtrack is apparently missing. But, you know, maybe they'll fix that with a patch or something. But yeah, $50 for essentially at least six games, you know, capping out at 21 games since that's the total of all the versions. Yeah, fantastic deal. Like, do it up.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, The Excavation of Hobbs Barrow. Developed and published by Wad Jedi Games, released January 25th on the Switch for $14.99. Antiquarian, is that a word?
Antiquarian.
Antiquarian. Okay, thank you.
Think of it like antique.
That makes sense. Antiquarian Thomasina Bateman is writing a book on the barrows of England, documenting the treasure she finds buried within, when an intriguing letter summons her to the small village of Boulay? Do they say it in the game?
Yeah, they do.
You're just going to let me struggle?
I don't remember. I'm blanking on it right now so bad.
Tucked away in the remote countryside, she sets off by train with her assistant a day behind. Tim, what is going on in the excavation of Hobbs Barrow?
What is going on in the excavation of Hobbs Barrow? Sorry, I thought we're about to talk about a spooky
That's a
game.
Good and question. Tell me.
Thought I saw something move outside my door, and I was like, "Wait, what the fuck's going on out here?" I didn't see anything. All right, so this is a point and click adventure game. Excuse me. This is the Wadjet's follow up to, I believe, the last game they published was. Oh wait, no, there was something called Strangeland that I didn't play. The last one that I encountered was Unavowed, which was a game I reviewed when it released on Switch a couple years ago, and I quite enjoyed.
That too when it was on, I think it either Steam or Xbox, one or the other.
Yeah, cool. I quite enjoyed that game. As someone who I don't always love point and click adventure games. They bore me sometimes, but I was impressed with Unavowed because it really held my attention. So I've heard good things about this one, so I was excited to dive in to the excavation of Hobbs Barrow. So yeah, you are the Thomasina. You get this letter that summons you to this town to excavate this place called Hobbs Barrow, which should be, you know, like an ancient burial tomb thing. Just kind of you're an antiquarian, but also, you know, kind of like an archaeologist, sort of a historian person. So the game takes place technically she's telling you the story after everything happens. But, you know, as far as your gameplay goes, you are playing as Thomasina as she arrives in the village and gets her bearings. But there is also flashbacks to Thomasina when she was a young girl and interacting with her father. Her father is in a coma, basically. He is in sort of a vegetative state and has been for many years. And he was an antiquarian before her. And she is following in his footsteps. As you get settled in Hobbs Barrow, and the person who you were supposed to meet there is nowhere to be found, does not show up to meet you. And things, you very, things are very quickly getting a little ominous in this town around the excavation of this place. The locals don't want to talk about it. There will be like creepy flashes of creepy shit here and there that kind of set the tone as like there is something, you know, wrong with this place, Hobbs Barrow.
Something else very wrong is the fact that Raider Biz just subbed to us for the 10th month.
What is wrong with you?
Raider Biz, thank you so much. We love having you here. Thank you for the sub.
Absolutely.
Thank you, dude. We love you.
So the course of the game is Thomasina arriving, interacting with the townspeople, trying to find out more information about where this place is, local legends surrounding it. Ultimately, you know, getting permission and the ability to enter the Barrow and, you know, to see what the heck is going on down there. So yeah, it's a pointer and a clicker. You're clicking around the screen to get Thomasina around. I did play this on Switch, which was, you know, not a big deal. I feel like they figured out how to translate these games to controls at this point. Like, you can adjust the speed at which the cursor moves around the screen. It's like not a big deal. There's a button that will highlight where all the hotspots are on the screen, so you're not pixel hunting, which is good, because if you had to do that, I never would have fucking finished it. That's a lie. I would have just looked it up. Yeah, there was definitely some things I was just like, what the shit? Yeah, and there's a fast travel menu as you unlock key locations. And it's important, just as a little pointer there for you, if you're going to play this game, key locations where key things happen. So if something's not on the fast travel menu, it might not be all that relevant, and you don't need to keep walking back there. Nothing's going to change. Yeah, so you can get around pretty quickly, reasonably quickly, I guess I should say. There's still, I feel like there's some areas to get to where it's just a lot of, like, clicking and walking and clicking and walking, and it's just like, okay, come on now. You will find, you know, you got to talk to people, you got to ask about things to gather information, you will be picking up items. There is some amount of combining, you know, part thing with Cog B to make thing C, which you will need to solve some puzzles. Otherwise, it's just kind of showing people the right thing at the right time. And sometimes, yeah, you're just bashing your head against a wall, just showing everything in your pockets to every person in town, trying to figure out what the hell you got to do. So kind of the basic, my feelings on the game, as it were, is I feel like it basically, there's kind of like this prologue bit where it's her getting into town and that evening, and then there's the next day where she is trying to find information about where the Barrow is, more about, you know, what the townspeople feel about this and that. Then the second day is like you getting permission to excavate the Barrow, and then your momentum hitting a brick wall as Thomasina needs to get help in order to do the excavation. And then the final day is the actual investigation of the Barrow. And that is, you know, good stuff there at the end. And I thought there was good stuff at the beginning as it's building up when she gets into town. And that first day as you're slowly uncovering things. My beef with the game is that juicy middle day, that part in the middle where it's like, okay, well, I have permission, and then the game very much becomes the kind of adventure game that I do not like to play, because it's like, well, okay, to get permission, I need to get help from people. Where can I get help from people? I can get help from, you know, maybe the lord of the land will loan me some people, but how am I going to get to talk to him? Well, I got to help out his servant getting some milk. Well, how am I going to get milk? Well, I got to help this guy. Well, how am I going to help this guy? Well, he has arthritis, so I got to go get a thing from this lady. And how am I going to help this lady? Well, I got to go get, you know, this and that from this over here, but this thing is up over here. And I, you know, but I have to go in the church to talk to this lady. And then the other thing I need is over here. But to do that, I have to have a little girl do this thing. But to have her do this thing, I have to get this thing over here. And then remember something I did the first day and go back and grab a thing from there to combine with that to go into here. But then I have to go do some other thing. And then right when you think like, aha, I've made it, then the dude's like, no, you got to go do some other shit. And you're just like, motherfucker. And it ends up being a whole lot of just clicking around, you know, wandering all over the goddamn town, running errands, taking items to and fro. And just that part of the game was a real freaking slog, like a real momentum killer, which is a bummer for me. And not just from like a gameplay perspective, it feels like there is good story stuff to be had that day. And of course, things that are integral to the ultimate unraveling of the plot. But a lot of it was just going to and fro and doing menial errands because it's like, okay, well, we gotta, you know, you gotta do this stuff. And it didn't feel as good or as necessary overall to the, you know, the story of the game. But yeah, and then, and it's funny because that ended up being most of the game because I was just frustrated, like running around trying to figure this stuff out. Like there was a good flow to the first day, you know, the third day you are in a barrow. So it's pretty linear. There's far less screens to worry about. And then the creepiness is definitely up to the sky at that point. So that was good stuff. You know, I I think I finished like the first, you know, the first evening in like one sitting, then the next day probably in another sitting. It's when, you know, a dad size sitting is maybe like an hour or less. Yeah. And then, you know, the final day also in like a sitting, and then like that, that second day was like me picking at it for like 2 days. I'm just like, Jesus, oh, come on. And also I'll say like, as far as without spoiling anything, I think the ending is cool. I think there is a particular moment that an integral moment that could have, that something happens very, very suddenly that made me just kind of like, it seemed almost maybe a little out of character for Thomasina. That just like, maybe there could have been a little bit more pause, in that moment. And there wasn't, so it felt like a little bit awkward, but you know, definitely the way that, it was a cool ending, to the story.
Don't give too much away, obviously.
No, that's it. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just saying it's a cool ending, but I feel like there was part of it that felt a little weird. Could have been done better. Yeah. And you know, I was kind of doing some reading about it to see if there was like, there is only one ending to this game. It is the story the developers wanted to tell. As I saw them replying to someone who was complaining about it, and just like, okay, that's fair. I think it could have been done a little better. But yeah, overall, I ended up being a little bit disappointed just because with what a slog that middle part ended up being. I feel like the game starts strong, it ends strong, and in the middle you're like, God damn it, I'm playing an adventure game. And your mileage may vary with that particular assessment, but for me, that sucks.
Well, overall, the game's $15. What do you think?
I think it is getting a try it. Just that, you know, the middle is a momentum killer, but there is some really cool stuff going on at either end. I mean, if you're an adventure game person who's into that stuff, then by all means, you've probably already played it on PC, but, yeah, for your average adventure gamey person, just be aware that you're in for some real adventure gamey stuff in the middle. And, didn't care for that, but the story was cool. The mood of the game is cool. The story is cool, but
was the ending worth the slog?
I don't know, man. I feel like I could have just read about it or watched it. Like, I mean, if I wasn't reviewing it, or, you know, I mean, the game's not like super long. I don't have my Switch in front of me to double check how many hours. I can't believe it was more than 5. You know, I might have bounced off it to something else. So, but that's me. That's me. Not an adventure gamey dude, but you know, it's cool. Try it. That's fair.
That is
my assessment.
Sounds good.
Do as you will.
All right. That's it for you.
You'll love it.
Hey, don't deny it, but maybe don't buy it. Just try it. Maybe wait for sale. I don't know.
Think about it.
adventure curious.
Just think about it.
I'll decide now.
Just unavowed worked better for me. Just overall, I was just more into what that game. Yeah, it kept my attention more. So.
Oh my god. Cool.
Well, that is it for you, Tim. We will let you get going.
Me. Yeah, it's bedtime. It's after bedtime. I gotta go big teeps.
Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
No, I could go off on a tangent and a story, but do we really need that right now? There's more reviews to come.
I mean, it depends on
all the right, story. All right, fine. Okay, so, you know, I was going to jump in earlier when Chris was talking about his pristine adventures of Link. So, a while ago, this story took place over the course of months where my mom was like, oh, hey, you know, I found an NES in the house. Which surprised me because I thought I had my NES, but apparently we had another one, which I believe. And this is like the original, you know, box NES, you know, not the top loader. I definitely have the top loader. I know where that one is because in my house I've had the top loader. I've had another NES, which actually has the top, like that doesn't have the screws in it. I need to repair the pins in it. I've been meaning to do that for years. But anyway, she was like, oh, yeah, I found this NES in the attic. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll take that. That sounds great. I'll always have another NES in the house. And when she handed it off to me, and it was a day when I was like, you know, handing off my child to her for her to enjoy for the weekend. Like, she gives me, it is a complete in-box Nintendo Entertainment System.
Wow.
And it's like, and... You know, I opened the thing up and like it has the original styrofoam in there, like all the advertisements and manuals and stuff, and like all the packing materials in it, like the, you know, the plastic and stuff. And I was just like, holy shit. I can't believe she still had that because she threw out all my boxes for my NES and SNES games, which I'm not bitter about, maybe a little bit, but not. I mean, it was the only thing from my childhood she threw out, so I can't be that steamed. I could be a little bit steamed, and I am.
But of all the things,
yeah, like the box still had this big old NES styrofoam with the styrofoam inside, which is great. It is just fantastic. Cool thing, just out of nowhere. Had no idea we still had it.
Amazing. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, me too. All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of yous. I'm going to go TP.
All right, and you enjoy your NES.
I will. Yeah. I've been doing it for like 40 years.
I was gonna say play some Zelda 2.
Yeah. Eh, maybe not.
Name yourself Mark.
Wow, he's Mark. Out. All right, next game to talk about is Dance of Death, Dulac and Fae, developed by Salix Games, published by Hidden Trap, released January 27th on Xbox One and Switch for $15.99, $18.88, the Ripper stocks London streets. Plays Arthurian immortal Sir Lancelot Dulac and Morgana Le Fay on a thrilling quest to stop history's most infamous murderer and save the city. Our own dynamic duo, Brooke and Aki, check this one out.
Yeah, this is going to be a mostly Brooke one, sadly. Ooh, I did not get a lot of time with this.
Hey, well, Brooke, let's hear, what is Dance of Death?
Well, this review might be a slightly rocky ride because, as we all know, I write notes in advance, but I didn't realize that they were going to reveal... I should have checked the game page because I didn't realize they were going to reveal the true identities of the man and the dog that begin in the game. But we're going to go with it, and I'm just going to read that part out loud, and we're going to just all laugh at me. I also didn't know Aki was going to review this with me, but I did write us a nice intro. So I'm just going to pop us off here. For me, this is a very fun, alive-feeling, really strong narrative mystery solver game. It's got a lot of interesting elements I don't normally get in your average like detective game. And I do think this is a really fun, you know, fresh adventure character and story-wise. It's very far away from the old tired Sherlock Holmes and Watson duo. And I've been enjoying a lot of games that are referencing that, but this is just really fresh for me. This game opens up, you're playing as a dog who is extremely hungry, and you're pretty pissed off about it. You're also playing as a man. As a dog, you can talk, and you can have a very beautiful woman's voice. Spoiler alert, here's where it gets rocky, you guys. You may or may not be a dog deep down, but we'll come to that later, or not at all, depending on how deep into the beginning chapter spoilers Aki and I want to get into tonight. See, Aki, I put you in my review after I saw your name this afternoon.
Yeah, and I don't think you really have to worry too much about the spoilers, because about stuff like that, because in the introduction, every time you meet a character, you unlock their character profile, including our two main characters right at the beginning of the game. And in there, it tells you some things.
Well, that's, I'm just delighted finding out that I didn't even read that on live show. And I'm just really happy about that. This is warming my heart. So I didn't read that. So I, about an hour and a half into this game, I was like, oh, cool, this is a really neat twist. And I was like, I'm updating my review notes. I was having a great time. So I'm going to think about that some more. But yeah, until then, I think even outside of like the characters that these two characters actually are, as far as mythology goes and Arthurian type stuff, we've got a nice dynamic duo vibe going on here between man and dog. You get to switch between the two characters as you go about your mystery solving. Delac is a gentleman. He's like a dreamer, and he thinks Faye, the dog, is heartless, and she kind of is. She's cold-blooded. She's secretive. She's kind of self-centered.
She's pissed all the time.
And, like, when we get deeper in the story, like, she kind of deserves to be, and I'm feeling that. But ultimately, what we got going on here that I really enjoyed is the human character is the more straight-laced and optimistic, and the dog is more working this, like, straight man angle, definitely more pessimistic. She's rolling her eyes all the time. She's done with your bullshit. It's pretty an entertaining switch-off. So you can switch between the two characters. Delac and Faye both have different abilities, let's say, when you're on a scene. Delac, you can switch to him and you can talk to the other human beings. You can carry a wallet or trinkets. You can pay for stuff that Faye wants. And as Faye, you can talk to any of the animals on the scene instead of the humans. You can use your incredible canine nasal abilities to like snuff stuff out, do dog stuff. Note on the gameplay before I turn this over to Aki for a little bit and we delve deeper into gameplay as opposed to narrative experience. One thing I love that this game does is the NPCs often, not all of them, but we'll say multiple things if you keep talking to them. And the option to talk to them does go away when you've exhausted the dialogue, which doesn't feel like too much to ask. But yeah, a lot of games don't do that. And I like to, although I don't feel like I need to beat every game or complete every game or 100%, I always want to talk to characters as much as I can. I don't really want to move on if I haven't exhausted dialogue options, especially if the NPCs are cool and well-written. So really love that. Yeah, going to turn it over to Aki for a minute.
And to go with that part, not only is the option to talk to them, does it go away, even above them, there's a big orange fucking exclamation point if they still have stuff to say to you. So if it's still there, there's still extra stuff you can hear, which is fantastic because you can just tell at a quick glance without having to push a button to check. And something I'm surprised you didn't mention was the art style. I really... I love the art style in this. To me, it reminds, just because of the colors and how things, the shapes of things, it reminds me a lot of claymation, which is so awesome. It's obviously not, but it just, everything about it reminds me of it, and I really appreciate that.
No, that's a really good point. Like, I have a lot I want to say visually about this game. Like, we're just scratching the surface here, and I completely agree. It feels like a lot of like time and money has been put into all the assets of this game. I'll say that. Like, I feel like it's well designed.
Yeah, it's everyone is voice acted as well, which is nice. And I wasn't put off by their voices, which was awesome. Because sometimes you're like, oh, I don't want to hear them ever talk again. And this wasn't one of those. This worked. And I'm like that
every week on this show. What?
Especially, you mean on the Thursday shows? I totally understand.
I didn't know that about you. I'm not as hard to please voice acting style, but I did. Like, I've got it on my nose that the voice acting is stellar in this game. And like, when we get through the first chapter, we almost have like a movie-esque credits rolling thing. And a lot of the credits are the voice actors. And I feel like it's deserved in this game to put those names out there early on. I feel like that's, you know, if the visual assets are a huge, huge pull for this game, as far as like the quality and breadth of the game, like the voice acting is almost just as good. Like, really impressed by all the actors.
Cool. And, well, the game sits at $16. What do the two of you think?
I am all for it. I think it was a great game, and it has a lot of point and click adventure parts to it, but none of them are particularly hard. And a good chunk of it is just talking with people, which I appreciate so much. And it requires two playthroughs. So you're going to get your money's worth out of this.
I do. I will agree with that. I heartily give this a buy it. I was kind of curious to see what you're going to say as far as like final rating. Aki, what I'm assuming you didn't play this for Switch. What did you play this for?
I played it on the Xbox.
Okay, so I had, you know, I kind of want to talk to you about that too. I think this game is, like I said, if the assets feel really expensive. It's got some incredible art, not only like visually, but audio wise, like all over the place. I felt like the execution of putting all those assets together was a little clunky. It's still a buy it for me, like far and away. And like, I don't know how much this game is. I gotta imagine $30-$40 range.
$15.99.
Whoa. Okay. Well, then maybe I'm gonna scrap some of my little nitpicky complaints here, because I think that's a steal for this content. I do want to say, like, I think this is a beautiful game. I almost wonder if it could have been optimized a little bit better for Switch, because I got a couple of those moments, and not at all like I did with the couple games that I felt this way about last year, but like I got a couple moments where I was like, this is seamless if I'm handheld, but if I'm playing this on the couch, I kind of got to scoot up and get really close to the TV to see some of the dialogue. At this price point, that's really not a big deal for me. And even when I was like, I was going to ask if this were like closer to $40, I was still going to end this review being like, I got a couple nitpicky little notes here, but I still think it's really high quality. It feels like all the artists that worked on the game were insanely talented, and maybe the only thing that could have gone wrong in just a little couple little places is it could have been playtested more, just to be like, hey, like we've got a couple things, like after kind of the tutorial chapter, it opens up, and just for a few seconds you're in the same scene that you were in, and I was like, oh, are we in the same location? But I know what I'm talking about.
It's on there on all versions.
Yeah, it's just an error.
How about
every
this?
Time you get like a new scene.
How about this? We're gonna draw a winner in chat to get this game on Xbox.
Yeah. Do it.
Think of that. Should I hit the enter button?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The
congrats to Rootbeer.
Nice. Hey! Congrats, Rootbeer. I only had one issue with the game personally, and that's when you're moving your characters around walking, it's very tanky and irritating. Sometimes because you can the camera is held in some areas, you can't move it around, so you can walk off screen.
Yeah,
if you're just trying to interact with things.
You read my mind there, and like it's not game breaking at all. It's not even very annoying, but it really, like, what they tried to do is in some scenes is to make it almost like not open worldy, but like give you a lot of options where you kind of have to walk around and interact, and it makes it feel a little more free. But what happened in a couple of the scenes in this game specifically, at least as far as I got, I only played this for a few hours, is you almost had too much freedom without the control of like, oh, we'll let you walk behind the sign, but you could get stuck behind the sign because we didn't like playtest that incredibly deeply, or just little stuff like that. And it kind of begs the question, like, do I want a linear experience that works super well and is super smooth and never gets like hung up on errors? Or do I want like an experience that's less linear and more fluffed up a little bit freedom wise, but that actually kind of hurts the execution of the game a little. But either way, those are really small complaints. I think this is a great game. I'm going to keep playing it. And I think it's super, super worth the price. Like, this has got a ton of content in it for that price.
Well, and if people are still on the fence, you could be like Rootbeer and possibly win a copy, because thanks to the awesome people at Hidden Trap, we've got a couple of copies of the game in our SML 10th anniversary prize pool. Official details aren't revealed until next episode, but just stay tuned because it's going to be really, really good.
Well, this game is an awesome prize. Like, this is, if I got this game as a prize, I would be super happy.
What if you got this game and like 9 other games?
That would be pretty sick.
What if you got that game and 19 other games?
That'd be pretty cool too, but I'd start to wonder, is it too good of a deal? What's going on with this SML business? What do they want?
What if
just your firstborn?
What if you got that game and 49 more games?
Damn.
Joe, you're only allowed to make me so jealous of whoever wins this, since I'm not allowed to join. And you're pushing that. You got to calm it down. I'm getting too jealous here.
So, yeah, there you go. Anyone else? Aki and Brooke, that's it for you two. Did you want to stick around? Were you hanging out?
I'll stick around
for a little bit.
Cool, because Pernell is up next.
Hello.
he finally gets to join in on this episode. Next game to talk about is Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree, developed by Wild Boy Studios, published by Untold Tales. Released January 27th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Atone is a Norse mythology-inspired hand-drawn game that blends interactive storytelling and complex puzzles with a rhythm game combat system. Inherit the role of a young warrior named Estra as she journeys through Midgard to unveil the truth behind her father's death. Purnell, what is going on in Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree?
The main quest, I damn near don't know either, because I get stuck on puzzles and that's it. That's the game. But as far as the quest itself is concerned, Estra is journeying across a map. And I personally am a fan of the art style. I know a number of people were kind of iffy on it. I like this kind of art style. Like, it feels almost voxely in a sense. But not fully voxy. I'm not even comparing. I'm not even using the correct way to describe it. But if anybody's listening, they're like, oh,
voxely-esque.
Yeah. Voxely. Yeah, let's go with that. Voxely-esque. That's close enough for me. But I'm a fan of the art style. But Estra is journeying across the land. And basically with the goal being to solve or resolve an issue regarding people in her land pretty much being infected by like a blue vein illness that makes them lose their sense of sanity and commit unpleasant acts upon their kin. And the way this ends up playing out is like she pretty much is journeying across the land, going into different dungeons and exploring them for potential items that I'll talk about a little bit what they can do in a minute. But in addition to that, she may every once in a while come across more than a few puzzles, which she will have to solve either to progress or to unlock elements that will give her access to other areas of the map or the world that she might not access otherwise, such as keys or items and such. The thing with the puzzles in this game that messes with me a little, though, is that I guess it was designed with the intent being like, well, they're simple enough that you should be able to solve every puzzle with little difficulty, which is why we don't much elaborate on any potential clues on how to solve them. But unfortunately for me, I get stuck on one or two, and that will be enough to derail my entire game, because see, not every puzzle is required. But Joe knows me well enough to know that if I see a puzzle in the game, I'm going to solve it. And if I don't solve it, the buck stops here. That's what I'm going to be doing, just solving one puzzle until my hair falls out. But I do enjoy some of the puzzles for the most part. I just hate the ones where it's like, here's this description, how to solve it. And the description doesn't even come close to giving you enough context to solve what you actually need to do. It's maddening a little bit. But I'm sure someone's listening to this right now and going, I played through that game. Those puzzles are all really easy. And to you, I say, one, you're really smart. Thank you. And also, hate you. Hate you so much. Now, in addition to the puzzle solving and progression to the map and narrative elements, there is also combat in the game, but combat isn't quite what you'd expect. In this game, when you get into a skirmish that involves battle, rather than actually have to go through a series of command selection and whatnot, you are instead treated to a sort of slightly cinematic scenario where a battle takes place in the background. And musical notes will fall down from the top of the screen along 2 to 4 scales, each scale corresponding to a face button. And when the button, the note hits the scale bottom, you hit the button and it corresponds to that to trigger a effective command, similar to some like Poppin' Music or Beatmania or some other game you've never heard of. Guitar Hero, everyone's heard of that. Let's go with that. So the way this is playing out is there's like measures in the song where the two characters in combat are kind of squaring off with each other and you're playing notes and you have to get to a certain threshold and maintain that position up until the point where one of the, I guess like midpoints of the battle takes place, in which case, depending on how well you did, determines whether or not you do damage to the opponent. And if you do damage to the opponent, that's fine. It's inconsequential. But if you don't meet the threshold, the opponent will do damage to you and you will lose health. The goal is to just survive the actual song. Get from beginning to end without running out of life. And if you manage to pull that off, the narrative will continue as assuming that Estra won the battle. Or if she didn't win the battle, then whatever situation that's meant to occur will occur. And you'll proceed with the game accordingly. I'm actually personally fine with the narrative, with the whole music game bit there. I wish that the battle sequences were a little bit more engaging, as in like more variety in the battle animation that can appear based on how well or poorly you do in the music thing, the music play. But anybody that knows me will also know that I'm a huge fan of music games. So anything that involves tapping a button to a beat, I'm probably going to have fun with it anyway. Hopefully so will you. And the difficulty of this music session, if you find yourself going, well, I'm not very music savvy, how am I supposed to keep up with this? Well, at the beginning of, like, before most of the battles in the game, there's usually a block that walks up that you can come across that lets you choose between a normal difficulty, which is like 2 scales, sometimes 3, hard difficulty, which ends up being maxing at 4 scales, and then story mode, which I didn't try, but I'm assuming they probably just give you the win half the freaking time. But if there's a story mode in the game, you can probably bet it's meant to just let you bypass the skill check just to continue the narrative, which is fine. That's why it's called story mode. And for the most part, the things that you find in the game are like hidden treasure chests that may include weird items. They're all like references to pop culture. Like I found like the Behelit egg from Berserk. I found like a cracked cell phone. Just random things that are meant to be like, ooh, cool, that thing from Berserk. And then when you get it, you get money for it, which allows you to make purchases at certain vendors that you may come across the, as you play through the game. You can buy things like food, which will heal you if you lose hearts in combat. Again, like items such as keys that allow you to open doors that you might not have gotten into otherwise, and just other doodads. There's also a sort of like, I guess like 3-tier system where there's like 3 different stats you can improve on as you play through the game that allow you to do different things. Like one of them allows you to purchase a hint for some of the puzzles, and the hint usually doesn't help. You're just like, well, fudge this hint. But if you're like the type of me, like you want to cheese, you can just like, well, pull up the hint, then reset the game and then go back and keep your item. Yeah, I did that. I don't care. I'm cool with that. But that's what that's meant to do. And then the other two, off the top of my head, I can't remember what they do. I just know I like to amass them as I can. I usually find them in like runes or through by solving puzzles. In the end, I will say the one thing about this game that still kind of killed me, but this is my personal attention span issue, is that the story was fine. Estra's journey was fine. The frog dude was cool. But a lot of the times I was coming across characters and just kind of being like, you know, I'm not really, like, I didn't really feel like I was really drawn to following their narrative, where they were going.
No emotional attachment.
Yes. I just felt like they were just like bit players meant to move Estra further along on her journey, which again is fine, but it also would be stronger if I ultimately cared about everybody I came across, even that smooth-talking jerkbag squirrel god thing.
Yeah, well, I'm the bit part that moves this review along. So $14.99, what are your thoughts on Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree?
I think it is a genuine genuine try, in the sense that it's got decent puzzling, and I like music rhythm games, so, and the music is actually very good, so it gets a high-end try. The reason I didn't go with a buy is because, again, some of the puzzles can be pretty obtuse, and I can imagine some people being pretty unhappy about getting stuck on an obtuse puzzle.
All right, sounds good. Next up, Trophy, developed by the 6502 Collective, published by 8-Bit Legit, released February 3rd on the Switch for $9.99. Save the peaceful planet of Gearus 9 from the evil machinations of Lord Q as you run, jump, and blast your way to victory. Collect hidden power-ups along the way and defeat some of the largest bosses ever seen on the NES, because this was an actual NES game, now available on the Switch. Chris, what are your thoughts on Trophy?
Okay, so Trophy is a retro throwback action platformer. As the creator of it will tell you many, many times, was created in 6502 assembly language, which is, of course, meaning that this game is an actual NES game. Mm-hmm. It will play on an NES. Not this version, of course. This is a digital download, but you know what I mean.
You could go to, I think it's weare8bitlegit.com. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. And
8bitlegit.com is where they sell physical versions of these games.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And, you know, I played a few of those kind of things by now. And by the way, our friends at Alwa's Awakening, or at Elden Pixels, has come out with an Alwa's Awakening on an actual NES cartridge as well that I purchased. So That's really cool too. So the main flavor of this game as a run and gun action platformer is going to be Mega Man. It's very Mega Man-esque. However, it is simplified to the point where it is essentially, like I said, you boot it up. It gives you the story. The story is quite long. It talks about, I guess, the future where, you know, robots are banned on Earth due to the AI wars that they call them, which I guess we're heading towards right now. And then, you know, there's a guy who, I guess, on Gearus 9 has created a little robot. The doctor's name is Dr. Sword, and he creates a little robot named Beeper. And then there's this other guy that decides to be evil and do evil things. I didn't, Dr. Q, Lord Q or whatever, Dr. Quine. And so in order to stop him, man and machine must combine for somehow. Basically, Trophy is the combination of Dr. Sword and Beeper. That's right. They gave the worst name to the combination of the two. Like, Dr. Sword is such a great name. Why did they not just keep that name? Anyways. So yeah, you play as this, like, robot type, or a fusion of doctor and robot, and you run through, basically you get to select from 8 stages, and each of the stages are very evenly kind of made in terms of difficulty. So it's really just choosing which one you want to play first. It defaults to Carnival stage, which is very interesting. Usually you'd want a stage like that to be a little later in the game because, you know, the boss of it is literally like a clown face that you have to blast. And it's like, that's your intro to the game, I guess. But actually, I like the bosses on here. They are definitely not the largest you've seen on the NES. They are large. You know, they do the classic thing of, like, making the background, like, you know, black and then throwing in this big multi-sprite kind of boss. They're pretty cool looking, actually. The first one I managed to beat was in the warehouse level. The, you know, 8 levels, you can do whatever you want. They have a warehouse level, and the boss is literally a forklift.
Nice.
I want to say that's a spoiler, but it's actually one of the preview screenshots in the on the Switch page. I made sure, so I wasn't spoiling anything. You can already see this boss on the page. Anyways, it was pretty great. I love the aesthetics of this game. Like I said, it's very much based on Mega Man. The backgrounds look cool. Sometimes, you know, they're a little insane, like Mega Man games, especially in that 3 and 4 area, which I kind of like. And the action and animation are very smooth. It definitely runs smooth, which I do like. It doesn't have, like, that kind of unlicensed platformer feel to it. Like, it really does feel like an NES game. The only thing I'm going to say about it is that, like, you know, when you beat a stage, nothing happens. Like, you beat a boss, it explodes. You know, you hold up a trophy because your name is Trophy, and trophies are also your power-up to give you more life as they're dropped by enemies, so that's the theme there. And then you know, unlike a Mega Man game, you don't get, like, an item or anything like that to, like, help you in the next stage. Like, there's no real sense of, like, progression apart from clearing stages. However, once you do clear all the 8 stages, you get a 9th stage, and I guess that's the end of the game. They talk about hidden items. I certainly haven't found any. So they're very well hidden from me, but, like, the instruction book that comes with this game, they have a digital instruction book that's actually pretty funny. Because it, like, it does that thing that I love, that it gives all the enemies, like, you know, these anonymous enemies all have names. And there's pretty good ones, like Whirly Senior and Garbage Bot and, you know, what's one? Mama's Snowblower. That's a pretty good one.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed, like, the gameplay loop of this. I just kind of wish there was a little bit more to do in it than to just run, jump, and shoot, because that really seems to be what this game's all about. But, you know, hey, it's fine.
Hey, it's an NES game. So.
Yeah, we're comparing a game made by, like, essentially one or a few people versus, like, these games that back in the 80s were made by you know, large groups of people with huge budgets and like all this like incentive to come out with the most creative and mind-blowing stuff possible with the limitations of the hardware. So I'm not actually complaining. I'm just saying the fact that I'm even thinking, oh, I kind of wish there was a little bit more here, is like indicative of how close they got to like a really good authentic like NES experience. And again, there's no like major bugs or like, you know, slowdowns or anything like that apart from what you would expect on an NES. So hey, there nice. You go.
Well, it's $10, your verdict?
Yeah, go ahead and buy this one. It's very charming, and like I said, if you like playing Mega Man, then this is going to be very familiar to you. So go ahead and grab it.
All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. It's going to be a quickie look at Talisman Digital Edition, developed and published by Nomad Games. Another group have been awesome enough to kick in a few extra copies to our SML 10th anniversary contest. The game is available now on Xbox for $11.99, along with a ton of various DLC to purchase. Choose from a roster of characters who have unique strengths and weaknesses and special abilities. Select your adventure carefully, as their skills could be the key to getting your hands on a mighty Crown of Command, a magical artifact that holds the power to destroy all rivals. The Crown of Command has the power to make the bearer the true ruler of the kingdom. Pernell, are you the true ruler of the kingdom?
I'm going to mention beforehand, and I'm going to make this extremely quick, that I appreciate that apparently that guy, the person who made Trophy, put a reference to Short Circuit in the game based on what you just said earlier. So much appreciated to that. Now, as far as Talisman goes, it's really quick. It is a board game where you choose a adventurer. The adventurer's purpose is to get to the center of the board, obtain the Crown of Command, and wrap this up. How do you get out there? Well, by rolling dice. You roll a die, 1 through 6. That determines how many spaces you can go in either the left or right direction. You move along the board. When you stop, you draw a card, typically, which allows you to perform one event. Whether it's an event that affects other players, the board state, you get items, you get a follower, all of which and those things can allow you to buff your stats to possibly complete challenges better. You perform those actions, improve the stats of your character, hopefully encounter enemies that you can beat by having better stats plus dice rolls combined to complete those things for them, and then progress from one level of the board to the next, to the final level of the board, where as long as your stats can match up to the challenges, your goal is to progress to the center and complete the final challenge and obtain the Crown of Command. If you come across another opponent on the board, you have to do a combat against them. If you do an attack combat, you have to roll a die, match up to your attack stat and any followers or supports you've got. That's your attack stat. Highest number wins. Craft is magic, but the same thing. Only difference being with craft is that in addition to having a craft battle-based challenge, stat craft also determines how many spell cards you can have, which can be used during turns to affect other players, yourself, or the board state. Overall, the game is pretty fun. Saying for the fact that it can take forever because Talisman is based on a classic style of game where you pretty much roll the die and events occur. And since some of those events can affect whether or not you live or die, literally, and also items that you need to get to the center of the board are nestled within the adventure deck, you could find yourself spending a fair bit of time trying to get where you need to be. But if you're okay with the idea of the game possibly taking a fair bit of time and just exploring a board, having an adventure at the whims of the dice, can't really go wrong with Talisman. It's a classic for a reason. You'll enjoy yourself. The music's good. The presentation's decent. It's a fun game. I recommend it.
Ooh, well, it is $11.99. An official verdict on that?
That's a buy.
Okay, now here's where it gets tough. Because they have a complete edition available, and it sounds pricey because it runs for $71.99, but it includes 16 expansions, 24 extra characters, and 8 legendary decks, ranging minimum $2 to like $6, depending on what you're getting. What are your thoughts?
Deny that. Deny, deny, deny. So, Talisman is a ridiculously long game in the wrong circumstances. You slap on certain expansions that add to the board state, that game can take a very long time. I have quit games of Talisman because it took too goddamn long. It is not worth buying all that stuff on a whim.
So it's better to like cherry pick the stuff you want
Yes, piecemeal the game. You buy the base game and you piecemeal bit by bit to expand on the game in the ways that you would like until you're tired or solid, because you don't need all that. Guarantee you don't.
Sounds good. All right, we are done. That is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks everyone for being here, hanging out, and keeping me company.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, I guess.
Also,
Aki's still here. Brooke's still here. Chris and Purnell are still here.
No, man, everyone but Tim. Come on, wow. Tim.
Tim with his having a job in the morning.
We all have jobs in the morning.
I mean, that's not
a special treat.
I only have a job in the morning if you consider the fact that I play review games all day. And if you do, then I've been working this entire time.
Okay, so most of us have jobs in the morning. Okay, let's go with
that. I just wanted to say, with that
in mind, I'll say I'm envious because I would prefer to not have to go to work in the morning as long as my finances are intact.
So. Well, you, right now you could probably afford to replace a furnace. I can't, so don't wish too hard.
Okay, I got you. I got you on that one.
I just wanted to say to congratulate Purnell on that last review, because that was like one of the tightest, fastest reviews I think I've heard on this show. Yeah,
speedrun,
especially from Purnell.
The game I forgot the name of was Monster Boy in the Cursed Kingdom. There you go.
I'll just scroll back and staple that right in where it went. Music this episode, we're going to play something off of the Blood Curse album, a tribute to Castlevania 3, just released a few weeks ago. There's a hell of a lot of good people on this album. We've got Ropan Ugante, we've got Alexander Brandon, Stemmage, Mega Beardo, House the Great, Snappleman, Mustin, Danimal Cannon, Tiberian Sons. Does anyone have a recommendation or a request out of those people, or should I just find something and play it?
Mustin.
Okay, we'll play Deja Vu by Mustin. Go. We'll be right back.